We're talking now with Ethan Lane from National Cattlemen's Beef Association's D.C. headquarters. Ethan, this is a weird, almost surreal time that we're in right now as far as agriculture and the economy and society in general. In the midst of all that, a lot of pain in cattle country. We've had falling cattle prices, a little bit of a rebound, but still we've lost a lot of money, our cattle producers have. And I know you've been working with Capitol Hill and with Congress and with the administration on trying to at least get some restitution of that. Tell me about where we stand on that right now.
Well, I mean, you said a mouthful. This is just a surreal environment to be operating in. But the few items that we keep highlighting for Capitol Hill is that, you know, folks are in need of our protein right now more than ever before. As we've seen a drop off on the food service side, the fact is people are going to the grocery store, they're cleaning out shelves, they're buying all the beef they can get their hands on, and we're seeing that reflected in the market. The problem is we are not seeing that reflected for our cattlemen on the ground. That the difference between what we've seen as far as profit on the box beef side and what our producers are putting in their pocket in the market is striking, and it's just not reflective of reality. And that's been a lot of our focus in not just the last few weeks, but quite frankly for months now, coming out of the Holcomb fire and before, because we do have that underlying price discovery issue in our cattle markets. And yeah, we're seeing some rebound this week, and we're seeing cash prices up in that 120 plus range, which is good news. It's moving back in the right direction, but it's nowhere near enough to make up for the losses that a lot of those guys on the feeder side have incurred selling their live cattle in the last few weeks. And that's been our message to Capitol Hill is, you know, if you're crafting a $2 trillion package, even though typically the cattle industry doesn't ask for that kind of cash support from the government, we're unique in agriculture and that's just not something we typically ask for. In fact, most of us have policy against it. But these are extraordinary times, and so we've engaged in some extraordinary measures. And the package that was passed out of the Senate last night includes $9.5 billion in aid for what they're describing as specialty crop, local food systems and livestock producers. So that's the bucket from which we're going to be able to receive some support for producers. You know, we're still working through the details of what that will look like. That's not the only thing that's in that package. Obviously, us and Farm Bureau and everybody else has all asked the Hill as part of this package for flexibility in some of those debt obligations that our producers have, access to capital through some of these other programs. You know, one of the hurdles we have is they put a lot of work into the small business component of this bill, and that's great for a lot of parts of the U.S. economy. But SBA loans aren't accessible to most cattle producers. They're accessible to co-ops, but our guys can't tap into those. So it limits their resources, and it limits their ability to access some of those other tools. So, you know, we're hopeful that we can carve out some of this $9.5 billion to shore up some of those producers that have been most impacted by this distortion in the market that we've seen. So that's been one of our focuses. Obviously, Ron, we're also continuing to keep a real strong eye on and hand in making sure that the supply chain continues to operate. Because, you know, we can talk about prices all day, but if we see plants go down, if we can't get trucks from point A to point B, if that supply chain grounds to a halt, then we go to a whole new level of hurt. And we have been working overtime to make sure that doesn't happen. Having a designation as critical infrastructure by the Department of Homeland Security is a big help there. And what we've spent a lot of time in the last week and a half, 2 weeks doing is air traffic control with the agencies, highlighting problems, you know, where we see local authorities have a truck pulled over on the side of the road, working with authorities to make sure that driver can get back on the road and get his load to where it needs to go. You know, working with folks at the borders, working with FSIS and APHIS to make sure that they're going to continue to have inspectors engaged in the plants. You know, this has been an all hands on deck exercise, kind of 24 hours a day for our team for the last few weeks, and we don't envision it slowing down anytime soon. Although it is nice to get over that Senate hurdle, because that has been a real fight for the last week and a half.
Now, of that pot of money that will be available to several groups, including the livestock industry, including the beef cattle industry, what is your, you know, what is a best case scenario in your mind as far as the aid coming back to the country for the beef industry?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think whenever you start to talk about numbers this big, everybody's eyes start to grow, right? They're all looking at what that might mean for them, what that might mean for their operation. And so talking about how we structure this kind of thing so that the money gets to the producers that have actually been impacted, and that have actually taken these losses in the last few weeks is going to be really important. And the challenge here is we haven't done this before. You know, if you're in other parts of agriculture that are more used to sort of direct payments and support from the government, this is an easier equation. They're used to having this conversation. We don't do this in the cattle industry typically. So you know, to some extent, we're having to talk through what that might look like and how you quantify loss and how you make sure that. And I know the secretary is keenly focused on making sure that any payments go out go to those producers that are hurting. So that's I think where the conversation is now, is that technical implementation. A lot of credit needs to go to Chairman Roberts at the Senate Agriculture Committee, as well as Leader McConnell and those senators around cattle country that have really put a lot of hard work into getting us to this point. This thing doesn't come together by accident. It takes champions for our industry doing a lot of work behind the scenes to make this a reality. Now a new phase of hard work is going to begin with USDA once this thing is passed out of the House, trying to figure out how we implement it quickly and how we get support to those producers that really need it.
Are you making any recommendations back to your membership to cattle producers? You know, do they need to be, you know, documenting, you know, if they took cattle to town after the market had crashed, do they need to be documenting that type of stuff potentially for getting involved?
Absolutely. I mean, I sure wouldn't be throwing away any paperwork right now. I just, because we've heard different options about based on receipts. And so I sure, if I was a producer out there that had taken cattle to market in the last few weeks, I'd sure want that documentation handy, because you know I think there are a lot of different discussions going on about how this might play out, and you know if that were my business, I'd sure want to have every bit of documentation I could get my hands on to be able to demonstrate my case.
On the supply side, what sort of conversations are you having with some of our partners, like the packing industry and others? You know, obviously, I guess the biggest fear is that they have a large number of their workers go out ill, go out sick, and that could be a big problem. What are they telling you about what they're trying to do, you know, to make sure that they keep everything flowing through?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, the thing that we're hearing, that we're pleased to hear, is that their focus is on keeping those plants up and operating. I mean, that is essential to make sure that supply keeps moving through the system. And you know, I think they're all working their various pandemic response plans and laying that guidance for how they're going to respond if they start to get positives for coronavirus amongst their workforce. You know, I think the good news is, and I don't want to speak for them, obviously they have their own communicators, but I think, you know, a few weeks ago the perspective was more sort of like a lot of different sectors of the economy: if we get a positive, we're going to shut everything down. I think they've moved away from that. I think they have started to put some plans in place for how they move forward and isolate if they do get a positive without having to shut things down. That's good news. The fact that they're thinking dynamically about that and looking for ways to make sure they can continue to operate, that is good news. I think the federal agencies, those inspectors at FSIS and APHIS and AMS and elsewhere are doing the same thing. Because I mean, at a certain point, if we look at the infection rates we've seen in other countries, that is something that we could see. You know, there's two different conversations, right? There's, gosh, we have one positive, what do we do there? Versus we simply have so many positives and people who are out quarantined that we now have a workforce shortage issue. I mean, that's, quite frankly, that's part of the problem in the House of Representatives, is they have enough members of Congress that are quarantined at this point that it's difficult to vote. So, I mean, that's something that's going to become increasingly an issue as we move forward. But asking for flexibility in overtime, asking for flexibility in scheduling so that as their workforce diminishes, if that in fact is the case, they're able to get those workers to where they're needed and they have the resources to compensate them, I think is going to be really important. I mean, flexibility is going to continue to be the word of the day here across all of these different segments. We're going to have to be able to play this stuff off the wall. We're going to have to be able to respond dynamically as conditions change in order to make sure that the supply chain keeps moving.
I guess this whole atmosphere, whether you're talking about within our economy or inside the Washington, D.C. beltway, it's unprecedented.
Well, it is. I mean, there's just nothing to compare this to. You know, you look back to 2008. Those of us that are old enough look back to 9/11. You know, I mean, as far as things to compare this to, there are just very few. I don't think any of us ever thought we'd be having a conversation about what it looks like to just grind the U.S. economy to a halt for a month or two and see what happens. But that's where we are. And, you know, I think I've been fascinated to watch the reactions to President Trump saying that he'd like to see things start to perk back up by Easter. You know, and I've seen a lot of, you know, folks, especially those that kind of start out disliking the president, reacting very negatively to that. But boy, I can certainly see where his head is, right? I mean, we can only keep this economy asleep so long. And so having some kind of a date to look forward to when we can start to power back up, is I think critical. We can't just go to sleep for months and hope for the best. And in our industry in particular, we can't go to sleep at all. I mean, even if people are locked in their homes, they still need to eat. And that means that we need to keep our business moving through that. And if that means, you know, we know that the Packers have had to shift, you know, what they would typically be shipping to the food service side. Obviously, that demand has shifted from food service to retail, and that's a pivot for them that they're, I know, managing on their side. But at the end of the day, the hope is that overall volume of beef is still getting into consumers' refrigerators and onto their plates, and that we're still the protein they choose. So far, so good. I mean, that's certainly from the anecdotal evidence and the evidence we're seeing as far as purchases, that's happening, and that's great news. We hope that holds up. You know, I think it's always a concern that folks stocked up their freezers last week, so they don't need to buy any more this week. But you know, as we get into the spring, I've even heard some people talking about the fact that, you know, if you have to stay home for the next month, it's sure nice weather to grill. So maybe that helps us a little bit as well. That if you're going to be home and looking for things to do, one thing you can do is fire up the grill and cook some burgers or cook some steaks. You know, to pass the time. But boy, it's just, there's nothing to compare this to. There's no benchmark.
Thanks, Ethan. Ethan Lane with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in their Washington, D.C. headquarters. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.